Chapter 2. Year Zero. The corporation asked us to keep daily diaries, and gave us a program guaranteed to keep them private until 50 years after the last one of us has died. Our privacy guarded, I suppose, by the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus. I'll pretend they're telling the truth, and anyhow, I don't have a lot to hide. I admit that I pick my nose when no one is looking. I don't like my body very much. I prefer masturbation to sex with my husband. I'm jealous, and a little bit afraid of Elsa, and trust her not at all. She will have every man on this boat, then come after the women. But it's not as if I don't have fantasies about her men. One of them, anyhow. I've started writing because the trip has officially begun. We started blasting today. What a verb, as if we were miners. But it's accurate. We're standing on top of a matter-slash-antimatter bomb that will keep exploding for 12.8 years plus. Trying to get used to Earth's strength gravity. I asked Paul how long it would take if we accelerated with Mars normal gravity. He said he couldn't do hypergolic cosines or something in his head, then fiddled with his notebook and said it wouldn't work. It would take umpty-ump years to get there. Umpty-less-ump. But long, in our time frame. But we might get there with our backs intact. I can't find any way to stand that doesn't make my back hurt. Part of the problem is associative dissonance. How nice to have a college education and have names for everything. My body feels this gravity and thinks I should be in a gym in Little Mars, an hour of sweat, then back to normal. But this is normal. All through human history, people put up with weighing this much. So settle down, back, and get used to it. Later, I heard splashing. The pool finally filled. Took a towel over. Namir had the current on and was swimming in place. I'd never seen him naked. He looks good for a man his age. Solid muscles and only a little paunch. A lot of hair. He's circumcised. Something I'd only seen in pictures. It makes him look vulnerable. It also makes his dick look longer. Or maybe it just is longer. I'll have to ask Paul. Or maybe not. The timer rang, and he got out. I would like to report that his vulnerable penis sprang instantly erect when I stepped out of my robe, but alas, it just sat there. Perhaps he's seen a naked woman or two before. Maybe even one with tits. The water was cold, but felt good, and I warmed up fast with the current at 6 knots. Turned it down to 1 for the backstroke. Namir did glance at my frontal aspect, cuntal, but then politely turned away. I had a wicked impulse to tease him, but don't feel that I know him well enough, which is odd after all these weeks. But he's a formal, quiet man. He jokes and laughs when it's appropriate, but when he's by himself, he looks like he's thinking about something sad. Which, of course, he must be. He walked through Tel Aviv right after Gehenna, millions of his countrymen dead and rotting in the desert sun. What could anyone learn, or do, or believe, to get over that? He told us that 2 of the men under his command killed themselves that first day. Shot themselves. He said that like he was describing the weather. But I think his calm fatalism gives us all a kind of strength. We will probably die on this trip. The trick is to say that without being brave or dramatic. We will probably have powdered eggs for breakfast. We will probably die in 5 years and 3 months. Pass the salt, please. Namir cooked his first dinner last night, and it was pretty good. Considering the restrictions he's working under. Spaghetti with meatless meatballs. With reconstituted vegetables that weren't too mushy. Before long, we'll all be staring at the hydroponic garden chanting, "Grow! Grow!" Actually, we'll all be doing something more or less constructive. We talked about that after dinner. Paul's continuing his VR coursework for a doctorate in astronomy and astrophysics, to complement his geology degrees. Elsa is studying trauma medicine and also does abstract needlepoint, and God knows what kind of bizarre sex. Dustin says he doesn't have to actually do anything. A philosopher by training, he might burst into thought at any moment. He's also practicing trick shots on the pool table, though I don't know how long that will last. Elsa asked him to limit the noise to 10 minutes at a time, preferably once a year. Moonboy is a good pianist, huge hands, but he usually plays silently with earphones. He's writing a long composition that he began when he left Mars. He's a xenologist, of course, like Meryl and me, so we have plenty to do, getting ready to meet the others. Meryl also does word and number puzzles with grim seriousness. Taped to her wall, she has a crossword puzzle that has 10,000 squares. Namir does woodwork as well as cooking. He brought some fancy wood and knives from Earth. He also studies poetry, though he says he hasn't written any since he was young. He works with formal poetry in Hebrew and Japanese as well as English. His job title at the UN before Gehenna was Cultural Attaché. I wonder how many people knew he was a spy. Maybe they all did. He even looks like a spy, muscular and handsome and dark. He moves with grace. I sort of want him, and sort of don't. The Martians weren't in on the after-dinner conversation. They rarely join us for meals. They don't eat human food, and perhaps they're uncomfortable watching us consume it. But I'm pretty sure that their answer to, "What do you plan to do for the next 6.5 or 13 years? Would be, same as always. They're born into a specific social and intellectual function and don't deviate much. Fly and Amber's yellow family are recorders. They simply remember everything that happens in their presence. They're weirdly acute and comprehensive. I could fan a book's pages in front of Fly and Amber, and immediately afterward, or 10 years after, he could recite the book back to me. Snowbird's white clan is harder to pin down. They classify things and visualize and articulate relationships. They're naturally curious and seem to like humans, unlike Fly and Amber's family, I have to say. Every kind of Martian has remarkable verbal memory. They're born with a basic vocabulary, evidently different for each family, and add new words just by hearing them. They have no written language, though human linguists are making headway on that. Meryl and Moonboy and I are adding to an existing vocabulary of about 500 words and word-like noises, with help mainly from Snowbird. Meryl is best with it. She worked with porpoise and whale communication, inventing phoneme-like symbols for repeated sounds. We'll never be able to speak it. It's full of noises that people can't make, at least not with the mouth. But Moonboy believes he can approximate it with a keyboard in synthesizer mode, with percussion, and fortunately Snowbird is fascinated by the idea and willing to work with him hour after hour, tweaking the synthesizer's output. This doesn't read much like a diary. I remember my freshman year, on the way to Mars, studying the London journals of Pepys and Boswell. But Pepys was wandering around his ruined city, and Boswell had Dr. Johnson to write about, then going down to London Bridge for his whores. The professor said Boswell had a condom made of wood. That's stranger than Martians. We need a Boswell or a Pepys instead of, or along with, this ragtag bunch of scientists and spies. The huge tragedy of London's collapsing under fire and plague is small, compared to 8 billion human beings snuffed out for being human.